Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNRadio.com/Behind the Badge.
I'm Jim Goodis in the WGN Radio Newsroom, and welcome to this WGN Radio News Podcast. It was May 7, 1997, that Francis George, who was the Catholic Archbishop of Portland, Oregon, succeeded Joseph Cardinal Bernardine to become Archbishop of Chicago. As Cardinal George marks his 10th anniversary as the leader of Chicago's Roman Catholic Archdiocese, he invited me to his residence on North State Parkway to discuss his tenure, the challenges he faces as Archbishop and personally, and the future, both his and that of the Archdiocese. Your Eminence, thank you very much for inviting us into your home for this interview.
Glad to be with you. Thanks.
10 years, hard to believe.
Yeah.
It's been that long since you have become Archbishop of Chicago. Mm-hmm. Let's start with sort of a state of the Archdiocese as we mark your 10th year here.
Well, it's a mixed picture, as it always is and always will be. What's good is that a lot of the parishes are vital and the movements are attracting people to come close to God. There are a lot of holy people in Cook and Lake County. I meet them when I go around. Very generous people. There's a deep generosity to support the works of the church, so that I think the management is probably a little tighter than it has been, and I'm happy to do that. We're more responsible in the way that we approach things. But most of all, it's that generosity that is evidenced in people giving time and giving of money and giving in many ways that encourages me, and so that I look at that and I say things are going pretty well. But then I look at our own sinfulness at times, and the after effect of scandals, and the difficulties of reaching out to some groups and keeping institutions going that have defined people's lives in the city especially. And, I look at that and say, I wish things were a lot stronger than they are. But it's a very mixed situation.
You mentioned scandal, and one of the challenges that you have faced in your time as Archbishop of Chicago, of course, have been the allegations of sexual abuse by priests, a subject that you've taken very seriously and you've taken several steps to address. Where do we stand right now in terms of how the Archdiocese is dealing with allegations of sexual abuse by priests?
The Archdiocese began to address this issue very seriously in 91, 92, before I became Archbishop under Cardinal Bernardine. The rules were responsibly done, but they did permit men who had this in their past to continue in some form of public ministry. I think at that time they didn't realize the rate of recidivism, and they didn't realize the scandal to people that they could imagine a priest had done this. And that would so seriously compromise his ability to minister. So in 2002, those all changed, and we went into a zero tolerance. We also had, however, the regulation that while investigation was going on, we could keep somebody in place until we determined that it was probably true, and therefore we went to all the parishes where the man was and tried to ask other victims to come forward. Now we take a man out before the investigation is complete, and that's a certain danger to that, but it means that children are better protected. In terms of priests, we've gone through all the records again. They had gone through them all except the seminary records before, and so I can say that there's nobody in public ministry in the Archdiocese right now that any record shows has anything like this in his past. Now, does that mean it will never happen again? No. Who can say that? Sin has been with us from the beginning, but I would say that with all the safeguards about priests, with all the protective programs around children, with all the way background checks have been done for any volunteers even, let alone priests and teachers, etc., that it is a very, very safe environment right now in every Catholic institution. Can more be done? Well, we keep asking. We've just got done with a panel report about supervision, where, you know, certain lacunae in the supervisory process can be closed. So we have to keep improving the policies. But I think they're basically very sound, and they protect children. They also see to it that the ministry is not done by anybody who has ever abused a child. And there instruct us all on how to be more protective of children in the future as we go forward. It was something that isn't just a problem for the church, it is a social problem.
We talk about supervision. Is there any way to do any kind of real-time monitoring to prevent things from happening, or if something does happen, to detect it, to detect a problem sooner so that you can take action and things can be addressed?
Well, because we delayed, looking back, we now take action immediately as soon as there is an allegation. It's a voluntary stepping aside on the part of the priest because the investigation that permits us to take him out isn't done. So I think the problem remains, however, as you said, we don't have police power, and we don't have the kind of apparatus to supervise nor to investigate that we would have if we were the state. So we ask the state to help us. Sometimes they can, sometimes they can't, sometimes they will. Sometimes they have their own restrictions. So we're on our own in a situation that does depend upon a lot of cooperation that isn't always forthcoming. I think we do it responsibly as best we can. And we're very grateful when the state will help us, because everything we know, the state knows. That isn't vice versa. Sometimes the state knew some things that we wish we had known.
Another challenge that you faced is, not only are you the spiritual leader of the Archdiocese of Chicago, but you are essentially the CEO of the Archdiocese of Chicago. Mm-hmm. And a church runs on money. Mm-hmm. And you have had to make some painful decisions, closing
yes.
churches, closing schools.
Mm-hmm.
As we look forward, how likely are we to see more of that? And what can be done to help prevent that sort of thing?
Well, nothing closes if there is money and people. So that if we have enough money and we have enough people, everything will stay open. It's very traumatic. I mentioned a couple of times, I closed last year the parish where I was baptized. That was not an easy decision. But the people weren't there any longer. So that's why we talk about evangelizing, offering the grace that comes from Christ to people in more effective ways, we hope. The money thing is really better, perhaps, than I would have thought. The people who are gathered are more generous than ever. And what we, I think, are going towards is perhaps a more intentional Catholicism. Catholic culture was deep in Chicago and very, very influential. With a lot of secularization and a lot of internal scandal and a lot of other problems, more and more people have to make a choice to be Catholic. It doesn't come automatically. And when they do that, then they know why they're Catholic. I got used to that in the Pacific Northwest, where, you know, 2/3 of the people belong to no church, and maybe 9-10% of people belong to the Catholic Church, which was biggest, but it certainly didn't have much cultural influence. So if you were in church there in Washington or Oregon State, you knew why you were there. And I think that's somewhat the case here, although it's a very different history. That means that you can count on the people who are there. But you can also count on the goodwill of a lot of others. I was impressed when I was sick and deeply touched by the huge outpouring of concern and of prayer. So that means the network is still there, even if they're not always in church as they should be or in somewhere else. The network is still there, and what we have to do is believe that and trust it, and then make use of it in ways that are more effective in the future. Particularly, I'd like to go back to what only we bring, and that is a spiritual relationship, a relationship to God. You can't disconnect the CEO and the spiritual part of it, because while we have a corporation, that's not going to last. What's going to last is the spirituality. That's what you bring into eternity, those relationships with God and with one another in Christ. Everything else is going to disappear. And the reason we have the whole visible structure is precisely to protect those relationships. So we want to spend more time looking at those relationships, I think, in the next few years, and then the rest will take care of itself.
In the past 10 years, speaking of spirituality and the involvement of the parishioners mm-hmm. in the Archdiocese, have you sensed a strengthening of the spirituality in the Archdiocese? Have you sensed a falling off of sorts? How would you rate how the members of the faithful in the Archdiocese of Chicago are interacting with their faith and with their church?
It's hard for me to judge it in terms of 10 years. I can just say as I go here, all of a sudden I see it strong. Very often depends upon effective leadership from a pastor or deacons and the lay ministers, the religious who are still there. It's hard for me to say that in 10 years. I know that there are a lot of holy people that's working. I know there are a lot of disaffected people for various reasons, some personal, some more social. How to sort it out, I don't know. We have the October counts, and they kind of go up and down. 2002, they took a real fall. Then they come up a little bit again. When I first got here, I was looking, and it was 1% increase in people going to Mass more regularly for a couple of years. Then in 2002, there was a fall off, a disillusionment. But in the end, people come to church not because they think the church is without sinners. God knows that's why we're in church, but because they need the gifts that Christ gives through the church. And so that's always there, and that will be there. We can do our best to cover them up sometimes, not to share them effectively, but nonetheless, that's where we have to build from again. Are we stronger? Are we weaker? I don't know. In some ways, I think we're stronger, depending on what you're looking at. I think we're better managed in many ways. In some ways, we're weaker. The position of religion, especially among the new generation, isn't so secure at times. Although you go into some of our parishes and you see a lot of young families. The death of John Paul II brought out the young people of the world. Maybe their practice will be somewhat different. But that pull, that tug to God is always there, because we say it's there because we're made in God's image and likeness. And so there's kind of a God-shaped hole. And even though some people will deny it and sometimes protest vigorously, the fact is you look at the history of the human race and you look at the vast majority of human peoples today, they're all religious. Religion is intrinsic to human nature. So our future, if it's going to be secular, is going to be very isolated. We won't be able to talk to most of the globe, which is going to remain religious.
But we have a globe now that has a 500-channel television universe, computers, mm-hmm. the internet, iPods. Mm-hmm. Does the church have to compete with those? And if so, sure. How do you?
Well, we use it to some extent, try to. You know, the Vatican makes good use of that. We in the Archdiocese have made better use of it in recent years. But it's just obviously one message among a lot of other competing messages. But not everybody is connected to everything all the time, and we'll take our chances the same as anybody else has to in the long run. We've been around for 2,000 years, and I expect we'll be around until Christ returns in glory. Where we'll be around, I don't know. That keeps shifting. We'll be here, I don't know, but we'll be there. And it will outlast nation states, will outlast, because it's a different sense of history. You know, you can't get caught up, I think, in this year or even in this 10 years. You have to have a little bit more distance when you look at something like the Catholic Church.
Let's look at something a little more short term, and that is, how long do you think you will remain as Archbishop of Chicago?
Well, I have 5 years to go before I hand in my resignation. At 75, you have to hand in your resignation, and then the Pope will accept it, or he won't. I don't know. Or I could be dead next year. You know, who knows? I mean, in a sense, you could say the same thing. Although I think you're a little healthier than I am. But, you know, my health is good right now. I've recovered, I think. All the statistics are switching as far as cancer is concerned. But it can come back tomorrow. That's one thing that I think, again, perhaps God uses evil things to help us. You know, you get a better sense of the time left and how do you want to spend your time, what's really important, what's not. We all waste a lot of time on things that are perhaps less important than the things we should be devoted to. Family life is important, and people spend time with their families if they're smart, because that's what sustains you in life, those kind of relationships. And that's why I would like to give more attention to spiritual relationships. But with the grace of God, with the help of God, I hope I'll last another 5 years. If not, somebody else will take my place.
If the pontiff says, please stay, would you like to stay beyond 75, if allowed?
Oh, I like being Archbishop of Chicago. I like the place. I like the people. I think it's too early to talk to that. You know, if I'm half dead and I really don't think I can do the job, I would ask him to reconsider that. The people, you know, need somebody with some vigor, I would think. It's a big job in the sense that it keeps you busy. But I think it's too early to talk about that. You know, a lot of things can happen in 5 years. A lot of things. The world gets turned on its head very quickly. We learned that on September 11th, 2001.
Getting back to your health, for many people, you are an inspiration. You have dealt with health issues pretty much your entire life, mm-hmm. from having polio to cancer to even your most recent fall, which was very widely covered by us and others, as you well know.
I guess so. People tell me. The picture was all over the place.
For many people, you are an inspiration because of the way you address this. And there are many people out there who are suffering from health problems.
Yes, they really are.
As we close out this interview, what would be your message to them in terms of how to approach this? Because I would imagine with your spiritual beliefs and background, mm-hmm. There is a way to approach this that, while obviously difficult and emotional and mm-hmm. troublesome, you can find strength even in times when you're facing yeah. challenges such as this.
Well, on a purely natural level, I think it helps to be stubborn, and I have been known to be somewhat stubborn about a lot of things. Secondly, spiritually, the important thing is not to be resentful. You know, I remember when I had polio, I always used to run, and I couldn't run anymore. And I was resentful of that for a while. I couldn't play ball. And so you had to overcome that, or else you live your life with resentments, and you can't be any good to anybody or yourself, let alone God, if your life is governed by resentment. So there's some lessons I learned there. For the rest, the biggest lesson spiritually is surrender, that one is willing to love enough to say, my life is yours, Lord. Do with it what you want, and then he'll take care of us. It's hard to surrender. We're afraid to love. Marriages break up because people don't surrender. The church suffers because people won't give themselves, to Christ as disciples in a radical way. We're afraid to love. And that's a general problem. Maybe it always was, but I think it's more of a problem now for us than it used to be, maybe because we've lost trust. But that's a lesson that the church should help people learn as best we can. We are ourselves sinners, but nonetheless, God is love. And so they should find from the church the grace and the courage to surrender to God and to others, and to be concerned about their health, but not so preoccupied that you spend all your time on it. Some of the most courageous people I know are people who are bedridden, and all they do is think about others. They pray for others. They're involved with others. They make phone calls as best they can. They're not consumed by their own illness. It doesn't trap them spiritually, although it traps them physically. Those are the real heroes, and there are a lot of them.
And let me ask you one more question before we go. How would you best like to be remembered? What do you hope people say about Francis Cardinal George when all is said and done?
That he was a good and faithful servant, that he was trying to be a good Archbishop of Chicago. That's my primary call, and I'm really concerned about doing that as well as I possibly can with God's grace. I've taught the gospel as it comes to us in the tradition that comes to us from the apostles, and tried to do that faithfully. I've celebrated the sacraments regularly with our people. I've tried to govern with love, but also fairly, and to make the decisions that have to be made as best I can make them. You know, that's what constitutes my life as Archbishop. For the rest, you know, I've made mistakes, a lot of them, and you continue to, you know, not call it right because you don't have information or whatever. But that's enough. I mean, I'm not interested in anything more than that, just to say that I did what the Lord called me to do here as Archbishop. I'd like to do it as long as he gives me the health to do that. And the rest is in his hands.
Your Eminence, thank you.
Thank you very much.